Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Scott Spears, WWGH Radio from Marion, Ohio, 107.1 FM, on location at the First Ladies Museum here in Canton, Ohio. It is a very interesting place, and a place where all the First Ladies can be housed, which is a very nice thing. We are here with Michelle, who does many things here at the First Ladies Museum, and today she is going to share some items from somebody we know a lot about here in Marion, Ohio, Florence Harding, former First Lady of the United States. It's going to be a lot of fun. Michelle, good to be with you.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited that you're here, and thank you so much for coming. And I, of course, Florence is one of my favorite First Ladies.
Now, why is that?
She's just so amazing. I mean, not only is she the first First Lady who can vote for her husband, but she was very positive, very pro-women, getting women to get out and vote. She supported veterans. She supported a lot of women's causes. Girl Scouts. She was huge, as you probably know, in the Girl Scout community. She promoted artists and brought a lot of Hollywood, that type of stuff. She really opened up the White House as a place of where things happen. She made it a happening place as opposed to just being in the background herself as a First Lady.
Now, interestingly enough, if we go back 100 years, she would have been serving as our First Lady of the United States during this time.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
I know. And I still find her so relevant today, so many of the things that she was all about. I mean, she was supporting the veterans. World War I, of course, was over, and so she made that a big part of her her cause and what she was talking about. I think very much like she's so relevant to Dr. Jill Biden, who's now supporting the families of our troops through, I'm blanking on the name of what her cause is called.
There's so many of them. I know.
But it's all about supporting our troops, the families. And so she's so relevant. She's, you know, here's First Lady still doing what Florence did 100 years ago.
Now, it's very interesting. If somebody were to make a day trip here to Canton from Marion, what would be on exhibit that they could see from Florence Harding? I know some of the items we have here are in the archives, right, but what would be on display that they could see?
Right now?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. You're really putting me on the spot.
What typically is on display of First Ladies here?
Well, we have themes. So we have, because we're not a huge place, so we have themes. So we have, like right now, what's up is the largest exhibit is on the first 100 days. So when the First Lady first comes on board, what is... She's discovering what she's doing. More modern First Ladies, they're getting their staff together. They're figuring out what this is about. They're oftentimes they're hosting state dinners. They're doing one of the first public things they do is the Easter egg roll, the White House Easter egg roll. And so they're doing those types of things and discovering the fashion end of things, the inauguration, all of that. And they're certainly being exposed to all of the media type things that are happening within the at that point. That how you're in this little fishbowl. It's a big fishbowl, actually. You're in the White House. You're learning about how your public life and your private life are all together in one house.
Before we get to the Florence Harding items here, how did the First Ladies Museum come to be?
Well, it was the brainchild of the founder, Mary Regula, who was Congressman Ralph Regula's wife. She used to give a lot of speeches about first ladies when she had to fill in for Ralph. And she was very frustrated because she couldn't find a lot of books written about first ladies. And so she decided she wanted to have a place like a bibliography type of where you could find materials on first ladies. And that's what she began with. And then it grew into, let's have a library. And here in Canton, of course, Ida McKinley's historical ancestral home was here. And so she started working there. And then she took over the building and made it into Ida's home and the family's home. And then she began to expand and take it even further. Because we were the National First Ladies Library, this building, the education building where we are right now, gave her the opportunity to really focus on do exhibits and expand more on physically people coming to see First Lady items and talk about their history.
Now, the things that we have here of Florence Harding, these are not on display.
No.
Where do these items come from?
They come from our archives. Some of these things were donated to us. Some of these things, I think just about everything of Florence's was donated to us through people who either purchased things through through Florence's granddaughter. I don't know whether you know her granddaughter, Jean DeWolf. She sold a lot of Florence's things after her death. And so people bought those things and then they kept them and then they donated them to us later on.
That's very nice.
Yes.
So what do we have here? Because this is very interesting to us here in Marion, because
sure.
Anything to do with Florence Harding is fascinating. She's not really, for as big a personality and for as strong a woman as she was, as you have said, she really doesn't get a lot of representation because she's in a time before television. Radio was even pretty new in that period. So there's not a lot of stuff in that regard.
That's right. That's very right. You see her in some newsreels of things, but again, they're just her waving, things like that. You don't get to hear her voice. You don't get to, I mean, Warren Harding makes a record. I know there's a record of his speeches, and I've listened to it. It's kind of hard to even understand what he's saying in those speeches. So it's all this technology is still a little too new to actually for her to be participating in a great way, although she was very interested in photography. There in the Marion Star, she helped Warren run that newspaper, and so she was very aware of the importance of photographs, and so that was one of the things that she did. She had groups come in to the White House, and she would sit and she would have them take pictures with her to help promote their causes and what they were doing. The DAR, the Daughters of 1812, the Girl Scouts, the Camp Scouts, or the Campfire Girls, all of those types of things. She was getting these pictures taken because she knew these pictures would go into the papers and people would read about it and see pictures of these organizations and what they were doing.
Absolutely. So what do we have here that is from the archives here to do with Florence Harding?
I brought several things, and so I didn't know what you wanted to talk about for sure. One of the coolest things I brought was this is a letter. Do you want to read it or you want me to? Go ahead and read it.
Let's see here.
As I do this.
This is on the White House stationery, June 20th, 1921. My dear Mrs. Gaddis, I just have received your letter, and it gives me pleasure to send you this line with my very sincere appreciation for its cordial expressions. I shall remember with interest our interview on the occasion when I was made a member of the Supreme Temple of the Daughters of the Nile, assuring you of the gratification I feel in my connection with this organization and my interest in its aims. I am sincerely yours, Florence Kling Harding. That's very interesting. She does use her maiden name as she signs it.
Yes.
Yeah. And you want to get a shot of that? Yeah.
Yes, please do. If that's too shiny, I can take it out of there. And then what I also have is the actual membership card. It's a plated membership card that was made out for Florence.
Look at that. My goodness. And the date on that is May 3rd, 1921?
Yes, I think so.
May 3rd, 1921, Mrs. Florence and Kling is on there. That's kind of interesting because we don't think of that. I mean, we know the Klings in Marion, but we don't think of her maiden name being listed on a lot of things.
She was very, very, she felt like that was very important. I don't know whether you know, she didn't wear a wedding ring. She was very progressive in her minds of that marriage was an equal type, it was an equal partnership. And so she felt that the ring was too binding. And I think that was kind of her showing her, again, that very progressive, what you don't think of in 1921 of most women being is she's using her maiden name in all of her documentation.
You know what's interesting to me as we look at this letter from the White House here? She has very good penmanship.
Doesn't she?
I mean, I don't think I've ever seen her name signed anywhere on anything in Marion. We've seen her name, but not in her actual signature. And this is from her collection. These are things that she kept.
Yes, exactly. So we have this one that's actually signed. We have several things, though, that aren't signed, I've actually brought down some things that were sent to her. I don't know if you know there in Marion, her very favorite song was A Perfect Day, and she announced that. And this is a letter from Carrie Jacobs Bond, who wrote A Perfect Day.
Oh.
And she's writing Florence about what's going on. She's very thrilled that Florence has announced that that's her favorite song, and she writes down here that she's going to send her a personal binder of her of her music. But what she's writing here is she's actually asking for a favor if you read
this. Yeah, let's see. Now, this is actually Valentine's Day, February 14th, 1921. The end of the road, I guess that Hollywood, California, so it would have been a Hollywood company. It's addressed to Mrs. Warren G. Harding, care of Mrs. Harry New, Washington, D.C. My dear Mrs. Harding, I hope you will pardon me for taking this liberty, but my old friend, Honorary J.B. Showalter of Pennsylvania is a candidate for appointment as third or fourth assistant postmaster general and has asked me to write the president a word of endorsement for him, and I am taking this liberty of asking your assistance with your husband in my dear old friend's behalf, and may I add another word of grateful thanks to you for the great help, your great interest in my little song has been devotedly yours. So she's asking for a favor here is what she's asking for.
She's asking Florence to use her association with the president to do this favor for this person that has asked for a job.
Now, yeah, postmaster position. Absolutely. Now, she did write something here in her own hand.
It says, I'm having book of my songs bound for you, sending them soon. CJB.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
So, you know, the idea of asking for help has been going on for a while, but what's particularly interesting here, in the 1920s, women had just had the right to vote for a couple years here, not even at this point, and they knew that Florence, clearly it was known in the country, or at least in the Hollywood circles, that Florence had some influence and wasn't just maybe your typical first lady prior to her.
Exactly, exactly. And that's what's so cool about Florence. I think she gets so overlooked that she's so aware of what's happening in the times, and she's using all the tools of technology as far as music and you know, when you think of the 20s, you think of the jazz and you know how important all of that is, and she's using all of those tools to help support women. I'm sure she talked to this person. I don't know. I forgot to look to see if he did get a postmaster or a postmaster job, but I know that she, knowing Florence, she definitely talked to Warren about it and saw what she could do about it.
Now, something interesting. Now, I was told, and I don't know if this is true or not, but Florence wrote a diary.
Yes.
And this was not known or found for many, many years. Now, my understanding is this diary is here somewhere.
Yes, it is. I'm sorry you didn't bring it. I can go run up and get it if you want.
That might be something, if you have time, only if you have time. But that's a very important item, my understanding. How did that come here, real quick, if you might have time to grab that?
It was, yes, it was, there's a gentleman, Craig Shermer, who I think you may know.
We've interviewed him.
Yes. And he brought that here and donated it to the National First Ladies Library. He found it, did he say in a barn or something
very strange?
Yes. Yeah. And he said it was this box of things, and he said no one knew what it was except he did. He knew that was, he didn't even realize that quote-unquote diary was in there. He just knew it was this big box of things that had correspondence with Florence. They call it a diary, but it's hard to know when she wrote some of these things. It's almost like, and I'll bring it down. It's very interesting. She writes on this, it's an 1891 calendar. That's of course when she and Warren Harding were married. And she writes all these little notes along the corners of this diary. Or this calendar, actually. And some of it is clear. It's like she's trying out like Christmas greetings. It'll say, you know, Merry Christmas to you, or and other things. You think that she must be reading something, and she likes what it says, so she's writing down quotes. Other things are just seem very random, whether she's pouring out her deepest thoughts kind of things.
Well, it's kind of interesting because clearly these letters would be things that she might think would be seen by the public at some point. Diary or whatever it's referred to is probably something she might never have thought would have been viewed.
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure she had no intention for anyone to ever see that. And that's, you're right. That's what I also brought down.
This is a
letter that she wrote to Mr. Wrigley, who was chewing gum founder.
Oh, very fascinating.
Go ahead.
July 13th, 1921. My dear Mr. Wrigley, you do so many kind and thoughtful things, and I do want you to know of my great appreciation of your interest in the Girl Scouts here. I have just heard from the Tea House Committee, who are delighted beyond measure at your most generous offer. Your aid promotes a good cause, and it is a splendid organization which is doing so much for future citizenship. So if you will send the gum here, I will be most happy to forward it to Mrs. Randolph Minner, who is the chairman of this committee. We had a delightful trip on the 4th, but no expedition has been pleasanter than that little trip down the river when you were here. With heartiest thanks for your interest in my scouts, which I deeply appreciate, sincerely yours, to Mr. William Wrigley.
Right.
Very Chicago, Illinois. That's fascinating.
This is a copy of a letter that she wrote. This is in again, it's in part some of those papers that the diary was found in, where this is a copy. So what she was doing there was there were tea houses. Before the Girl Scouts started selling cookies, they had little tea houses that they put up. And this one was in Washington, D.C. And you could go there and have tea. And in the one in Washington, you could have Harding waffles.
Oh, really?
They sold the Harding waffles there. So she was very, that's another thing that we have here. It's on, not always on display, but we have Florence Harding's Girl Scout uniform.
Oh, really?
So she was super supportive of the Girl Scouts. And there she is they were selling the Wrigley's gum there.
That's fascinating. That is fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you wanted to grab that diary real quick. Yeah, perfect. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
And again, we're here at the First Ladies Museum in Canton, Ohio, delving into the archives of Florence Harding, who is very important to us here in Marion, Ohio, obviously. Very interesting stuff. Now, Angie, do you want to come over here and sit for a second? What do you make of all this interesting stuff to do with the legendary Florence Harding? When we hear her name all the time in Marion, but right here is stuff she actually dealt with.
It's really neat to see the stuff that she actually wrote, and it's just really neat.
Well, it's fascinating that people, even back in those days, were writing her asking for favors. That the lady who wrote the song, I think A Perfect Day is the name of the song, which was Florence's favorite song, was calling to get a friend of hers a position with the Postal Service.
Yeah, it's all very interesting. And, I mean, they have her Girl Scout uniform. Was she a leader? Was she a girl?
You know, I think she was an honorary leader. And as First Lady, that was very important to her, I guess.
Right. She cared a lot about the kids.
Absolutely. And I think here comes the... Oh, no, go right ahead. Come on back in here. Yeah. It's fascinating stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
You could see why she's one of my favorites.
Yes, lately. Yes. Absolutely.
Everyone in Marion should be super proud of Florence Harding.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Oh, now, isn't this interesting?
Yeah, this is the diary that they call the diary. As you can see... It's called a diary, but
yeah, it's a.
It's just a calendar. Here's the beginning of it, and you can see that she writes around. Sometimes there's only one or two things. It's like folded up, so you can see. Sometimes there's this at the top. Sometimes they go all around like this. There's just random things that she writes. Sometimes it's quite poignant.
Let's see what she writes here. And it just seems to be like random thoughts that she's writing in what was her personal calendar. Now, would this have been, is it from the year 1891?
We don't know. We know that... How long she wrote on this, you know, we don't know. She doesn't say. Again, these are just like personal thoughts. You just don't know. We have no. They're very odd.
Yeah, it's a very.
Yeah.
And I would have guessed she would not suspect that people.
No.
Let's see here.
Here you go. With the hope you had a Christmas after your own heart.
Oh, very interesting.
You know, just things like this. Just like, but then there's other things. Some of the most things that kind of you find very kind of as a woman, you feel very pain. You feel her pain. You know, she writes about. The pain of a woman going through dealing with a man's
infidelities
and that type of thing. You can kind of read into that, and that's very hard to kind of. It makes you hurt a little bit. And I wish I'd know. I should have prepared better here. I would have found these things for you. because there's one that was Mary Regula's very favorite. And can I find it now?
Yeah, go right ahead. Maybe it'll show up here. Well, it's because if you were to see these, I mean, sometimes she writes in very dark pen.
Yes, so that's why we don't know how long ago this was, how many years it took, whether she just decided to write down this. We just don't know.
No, it just looks like she was writing all over the place on this calendar, kind of everywhere on here. How interesting.
One that she likes so much. There's several.
There's something here. Is that a man's heart? Something.
There you go. That might be one.
Something about a heart.
A man's heart is like a filing cabinet. Each section is complete in itself. No wife who knows something about her husband. He insulates his experiment. Oh my goodness, I can't read that. A sensation only given of himself.
Yeah. Well, she's clearly got some thoughts at this particular point. And we don't know if this is in the White House or not.
No, we have no idea. Here's another one. I can read this one a little bit better. The happy wife is not the woman who has married the best man on earth, but one who is philosophical enough to make the best of what she has.
Hmm. Interesting. Interesting.
Yes, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's interesting that she was this philosophical about things.
Yes.
Enough to even write it down.
Exactly.
Now, you know what I wonder as we see this? I understand she was just scratching this stuff down, not for any particular purpose, but that's kind of a very profound statement to just put down on an old calendar.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I know.
I wonder where that came from. Why write that down?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, wouldn't you like to know? I mean, but I think it gives us another dimension to Florence. It gives us, she becomes more human this way to us. These are things that she never meant anyone to see clearly. She's just scratching things down. She makes blots. She scratches them out. These were never meant to be seen, but they're things that she was thinking about. And, you know, and I think all of us can relate to those moments in our lives where it's just us and with our own thoughts. And she took the time to scribble down what she was thinking.
You know, it sounds like she was a very, in a way, I guess we'd say a little bit of a pained woman, that things that had happened that she was aware of in her life did weigh on her mind at many, many different times throughout her life.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, I think as things have come to light here, especially, gosh, within the last 10 years, isn't it? When was the Nan Britton, the paternity?
Yeah,
was
about 10 years ago.
Right, that just came out. It seems like just yesterday to me. But all of those things coming out, and I think, you have that knowledge of she was probably very aware of these kinds of things going on, and
she
had no way of getting it out other than by writing them down.
Now, this is, I can kind of, now the reason Michelle and I are having difficulty here, this is in somebody's shorthand handwriting from about 100 years ago, so this is a little difficult, but this is very clear here. We are tired, my heart and I. And that's just written down on the, look at this. This is very interesting. We are tired, my heart and I. Now, this was just scratched down. Now, in this one, I don't know if I'll be able to read this whole paragraph she wrote, but I can make some of this. My life has been a series of tragedies. And while I that word.
No.
Yeah, it's hard to tell what she's saying. It does say, myself. To find to the heart, and I know the last word there is fallen. Can you make out any of that sentence? It's a. It definitely, my life has been a series of tragedies.
And while I... Something. Myself to bend to the heart breaking serious that has been fallen.
Well, that's, I mean, something like that.
Yeah.
Just to say, my life has been a series of tragedies. That's what, now this is a lady who, by all accounts, they pretty well say ran the Marion Star. Warren was a good editor, but she was really the one who financially kept that thing going. Many people say had there not been a Florence, there would not been a President Harding. She made it to the First Lady of the United States. You couldn't get any higher than that. But yet, my life has been a series of tragedies. That's how she saw it.
Yeah. Well, she was married. You know, she eloped with Pete DeWolf very early on, before she even married Warren Harding. So, I believe he was an alcoholic, and so he abandoned her and her son, and Marshall, and so she had to come back to Marion, and she had to be divorced. And think about this. This is a woman who's divorced before women have the right to vote, before that. That's going to be very scandalous. And to come back to her, this little town, her father... I can't think of Amos Kling is one of the is the most richest man in Marion, and now his daughter has come back. She's divorced. She has this son. She has to. She can't make it on her own. She's she teaches piano lessons. So her son is helped raised by Amos, and actually Amos even has him take his last name, Kling, as opposed to being Marshall DeWolf. He becomes Marshall Kling. All of this has to weigh heavily on, it takes a toll on anyone, even Florence Harding. And then when she married, I think that she didn't have good taste in men. She didn't, you know, she didn't quite understand that, because she marries Warren. And yes, I think that they're very happily married for a while, and then Carrie Phillips is, of course, a neighbor. All that kind of thing happens, and then, so she just throws herself into, like she says, she makes the best of the situation.
This is a very, and this is all on the same page of this book, by the way. And again, I can't make all this out, but it says, I feel that much of my unhappiness was in the blood and something looks like frightful, maybe the last word there, but that's down there at the bottom. That's a fascinating.
I feel that much of my unhappiness is in the blood, and I have never been with today from this birthright, something about this birthright. I've never been able to do something
with
this birthright.
And at the top here, it says, the deepest learning without good breeding is maybe but entires me. I don't know what that word right there is.
Oh my goodness.
It's kind of hard to tell. Yeah, it's her handwriting, just
yes.
Kind of. But
to me, the perfect, is it perfect or deepest? The deepest learning
without
good breeding is unwelcome and tires me.
This is a very, on this day, a very distraught woman, it sounds like.
Yes.
And do you think, I mean, just reading this, I mean, we're not psychologists,
right,
but that she might have suffered from some kind of depression here.
Absolutely. Well, you know, she had kidney problems for most of her life. And that's actually how she dies is through that. She had a floating kidney. I mean, she almost died when she was in the White House. So I think that her kidney ailments, all of that type of thing, clearly that's going to take its toll on you.
Now, this almost looks like a list here that she's writing. Wedding anniversaries. First. But she's got the first, the second.
Year.
Yeah.
Cotton. Second year.
I know 10th is tin. 12th is linen. 13th is crystal.
Yeah. Third China. Is leather. Fifth is wooden. Seventh. I mean, it's.
Yeah, I wonder what she's. She's just kind of writing things now.
Very strange.
Yeah, it is. There was something about her that was kind of. You know, it seems like she's somebody who kept up when writing down what wedding anniversaries were, but also did have some kind of torment here, which is, it's too bad for her that you know, somebody said once who knew her that she was always distant, that she didn't have a whole lot of friends, you know, that I think she was quoted somewhere as saying Warren Harding was her best friend, and that didn't always turn out the best for her.
That's right. You bring up a really good point that, yeah, I think that Evelyn, oh, goodness.
I know, with the diamond, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes,
Hope Diamond, yeah.
That was probably one of her closest friends, but that's while she's in the White House. We just don't know. I think that Carrie Phillips and her husband, there's pictures of them vacationing together. She doesn't have that many female friends.
You know, it's always been fascinating to me because she was part of the Marion Star. When Warren dies, she does come back to Marion. She's pretty much, I mean, we think at this point, persuaded by Dr. Sawyer to come back because of her ailments. And in those days, there was not Secret Service protection for former first ladies, but yet in that year, year and a half before she dies, that she's back in Marion, there's hardly any record of her. I mean, she did a few public speeches, but not people weren't going to visit her. There's not a lot of that going on. Now, this is a lady who was first lady a year prior, and now she's living in Marion, Ohio, in a sanitarium. And really, for all intensive purposes, alone there, aside from Dr. Sawyer and her friends who occasionally came and visited.
You're right. I think twofold. Her health is very, very bad at this point. And I think the Teapot Dome, that scandal is already starting to happen. And so I think that people are suddenly shunning her because of, you know, that was like the Watergate of the time. So
the happiness time is something when I knew, you know, it seems very random filled. You know, the question has often been asked, and I don't think we'll ever know the answer to this, but she clearly knew about Carrie Phillips.
Yes.
I mean, there were letters written to that effect. We know that. Do you think she knew about Nan Britton? And this is just a guess, because to this point, there are no correspondences that have said that. But it's interesting that there's really, she had to be aware of her. But did she know that was going on, I guess?
Yeah. Since she doesn't tell us, yeah. I have to think, though, that she probably knew who he was and what he was about. And so I'm sure she knew the good and the bad about his weaknesses, that type of thing. And so I'm sure she felt that way. I'm sure she probably had an inkling.
I'm sure. Well, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, there are first ladies whose husbands did have picadillos, maybe as we would say, you know, it's just the way it
yes.
is. And we all know about it. But maybe it's because this was a time before television, as we've talked about, and before radio, that it really, in this day and age, was whispered. In the Eleanor Roosevelt, Hillary Clinton, JFK, Jackie Kennedy days, you know, it was kind of known, and you, in some ways, more known than maybe we wanted to know. But in this day, it really could be kept hidden.
Yes.
And so for something like that to get out was a real problem. And I think a lot of this, I can only guess, she was the public, general public didn't know at this time all this stuff, but she did. Yes. That's got to be tough.
Yes, absolutely. And think about how isolating that is. It's isolating enough when something of that depth happens to anyone. But you can at least go on Google and you can type in cheating husbands, and you can find a group of people who've gone through what you've gone through. This here is your, because of the communication you don't have, and you don't talk about it. There are certain things in this country we just don't, it wasn't good breeding to talk about. And it was also, for a woman, it was an embarrassment. It was, for right or wrong, it was a mar on what she was supposed to be, her wifely duties. Regardless of whether she had anything to do with it or not, our society frowned upon the woman. I mean, they still kind of do.
You know, Michelle, this is, I know you have to go here, yes. And but I thank you for showing us this, because I think what it does at this point in time, because of the scandals, unfortunately, that came out of Warren G. Harding, he's well known because he's a president. It's just going to be that way. And the scandals are going to be well known because we tend to like that in our society. But a first lady of that time, I mean, it's hard to think of a first lady prior to 1920 that really had any kind of, we might have known their names, but as far as their backgrounds, what they, it's hard to come up with that.
Exactly.
But she clearly was I don't want to use the word tormented, because I don't necessarily know it was that, but a sad woman, sad woman in a way. And that's very interesting, but I think that makes her more rounded, because, to be honest, I think that's kind of how we all are in a way. We're not all happy all the time.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah. You're so right. And that's why I wanted to bring these things down. I mean, here's this woman who's promoting things for other women. She's using, as a first lady, she's using her platform to draw attention to other causes. And that's so wonderful. It's so well-rounded. It shows that this is a woman who's really just like a you and a me. And yet she had this amazing platform and she uses it. She knows what she wants to do with it. I think a lot of it has to do with the Marion Star, with running that. And also, I don't want to, I think also, Warren Harding, yes, he had these very, he had these weaknesses or whatever you want to call it, but he was also, he did some wonderful things as a husband for Florence. He was a wonderful stepfather to Marshall, her son. He loved Marshall's, you know, they were his grandkids too. I don't, you know, like everything else, it's complicated. Their marriage was complicated and there was good and bad there.
Maybe, and this is in Mrs. Harding's own words, and I'm going to try. I think there's only one word here I can't make out, but it's, there are 28 pounds blood in the body average of a body of an average adult, and 10 pounds are moved at, it's something every her of the heart. I'm not, is it maybe, that seems to be the word, every something, something of the heart.
Pulsation?
That could be right. Yeah, that she kind of right. That could be a key. So there are 28 pounds of blood in the body of an average adult, and 10 pounds are moved at every pulsation of the heart. What an interesting thing just to scratch right down.
I know. She writes down the best things. My favorite, the one that Mary Regula absolutely loved, is all men, love makes all men liars. And
oh,
I can't
really
find that one here to save my life.
So she wrote that down. Love makes all men liars. Love makes all men liars.
And I'm trying to find that one, and I can't find it. It makes me so mad, and I'm not finding it here. like I said, it's so hard because she writes all over.
Yeah, these are covered in her writing. Absolutely. Love makes all men
liars. And I've seen it. That was Mary Regula's absolute favorite. And I wish I could find it because she writes more than that.
And again, this is here at the First Lady's Museum. Now, this stuff, though, is kept in a separate part because of the delicate nature of it and the historical nature of it, certainly. But boy, she wrote a lot. And it's interesting to see her handwriting here about 100 years later and all the things that are on her mind, just kind of thoughts. You know, I guess this could have been a diary or maybe just some kind of scratch pad for her. But
I've noticed in looking at a lot of her writing, this is the kind of thing she did. She just kind of would write all over things. It's quite fascinating. It's clearly the thing that she does. It's like her. I'm still hoping to find that. I'm probably looking right at it and can't find it here. Goodness.
And again, we are here at the First Lady's Museum looking at, you could call it a diary, you could maybe just a scratch pad of a calendar that Florence Harding kept with many, many pages here that she is just scribbling down all kinds of notes. A lot of them very serious, very, very guided moments.
Here's one that I found. A man has one, is that conscience?
Looks like it could be.
A man has one conscience, one code before marriage, another after.
And before, is that just the end of after? It looks like she might have underlined.
Looks like I'm not really sure. If that's like a little blur
yeah.
in the ink.
Now that's a fascinating quote. Wow. A man has one conscience, one code before marriage, and another after. Well, that, you know, that pretty much tells you what she knew. And that is Michelle from the First Ladies Museum in Canton, Ohio. We'll finish up that interview tomorrow morning. I hope everybody has a great day. I hope you were enjoying that interview. Fascinating stuff. From the life of Florence Harding, again, the First Ladies Museum in Canton, Ohio. Now, if you want to look at things like Florence Harding's diary, you call ahead, and they'll get that out for you. And you can take a look at letters and the diary and all kinds of things pertaining to Marion's favorite First Lady, Florence Harding. Hope everybody had a wonderful Memorial Day and has fun as we head on to the week ahead of us. All right, let's see. Did we get through everything today? I think we did. All right, for this day, Voice of a People 410 today. By the way, don't forget that.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP Marion, Ohio, the talking place. For legendary comedian Pat Cooper.
Listen to me. But if your friends want to buy that book, and I ain't making a dime on it, I tell you that. I don't give a damn about the money. Let them go to Amazon. It's a cheaper, and it's a great book because it's honest, and you're going to do a lot of laughing. And the only reason I wrote the book, because people who have no life are writing books, and they're boring. If you don't like my book, you'll say one thing. Boy, does he have a good book.
Thank you.